Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that kiss. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy
way. Welcome. This is brother Jay.
And this is Drew.
And in this episode, we are going to talk about the 2017 Wonder Woman.
Yeah, we are.
Starring Gal Gadot. I hope that's how you say it.
I think it's Gadot, but
Gal Gadot.
Yeah, everybody will know who you're talking about.
I don't know. I'm trying to be respectful. Chris Pine, Connie Nielsen, Robin Wright, Danny Houston, and some other familiar faces. But I had not seen this movie before last night, so.
And this was your pick.
It was, because first of all, it was available streaming, so that mm-hmm. was good. Plus, you know, I figure, you know, it's another World War II movie, so why not?
Except that it's not. Different World War, but yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, this is World War I.
Oh, I didn't get that.
It was. Yeah.
Oh, so that tells you how much I was paying attention. So that would be Mussolini, right?
No, he was World War II.
Who was World War I? Now I'm confused.
World War I, this is where my ignorance of history is going to get us into trouble, but World War I was more of a political war rather than an ideological war, right?
Oh, I should have remembered all of this. Good Lord. Okay. The assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. That started that. Okay.
Kicked it off. And trench warfare and mustard gas and all that horrible stuff.
Yeah, it's like come right back into my skull. Those history classes are like getting shaken loose now. Shook loose.
My big takeaway from history classes was my history teacher was really drilled it into us that trench warfare was the worst kind of warfare in the history of warfare. And at the time, we were, I guess we were just post-Cold War, but whenever she said something like that, my mind immediately went to, I imagine nuclear war would be a little bit worse.
I would think that you're pretty correct there, because that's pretty final. Nuclear war is pretty much it at this point.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did find it amusing that that we did a movie about a comic book character set in World War II last week that you were just kind of meh about. And then you chose another comic book character, but this time set in World War I.
Well, I figured we'd keep up the superhero theme. and since I hadn't seen this, and again, since it was streaming, I thought we'd go for it. I mean, why not? I got nothing to lose, right?
Do you have any history with the DC movies, the Zack Snyder universe of comic book movies?
Well, since I don't even know what they are, you'd have to tell me.
Like the Henry Cavill, Man of Steel, Ben nope. Affleck, Batman, Justice League, Aquaman.
I've seen the Ben Affleck Batman. I've seen the Jason Momoa Aquaman.
Okay, so you saw Batman versus Superman, or you saw Justice League? Or both.
Maybe I haven't seen Ben Affleck, if that's... So no, I haven't then.
Okay.
I'm thinking of George Clooney.
I'll get into trouble here, but from my perspective,
In your opinion...
Except that it's right.
just because it's your opinion doesn't mean it can't be right too.
Yeah, it is. It's inarguable, really. The DC movies tend to be a lot, I think, less fun and more self-serious, to their detriment.
I would agree that I thought this movie was less shticky, and a little more. It was definitely, I mean, there was a lot of darkness in this movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of commentary, social commentary, that was not very subtle. But
no.
I think, depending on which generation watches this movie, I think a younger generation, it would be subtle for. It would just all be, it would be subtext. But I think for those of us who are a little older and have seen lots of war in our time, it's just blatant. Blatant outward, so that explains why the open was with Wayne Industries.
So Wonder Woman first showed up in Batman versus Superman towards the end. She just showed up pretty much out of the blue in that movie and ended up being the best part of that movie. And then the next, she showed up in this movie next, and then she was in Justice League after this. But yeah, this was a huge movie when it came out. It ended up being, I think, the biggest movie of the summer in 2017.
Box office budget, $149 million, opening weekend, $100 million, world, U.S. gross, $412 million, cumulative worldwide gross, $821 million. So, yeah.
Yeah. Huge movie.
It was. Huge, so that's movie. Good. I'm not familiar with, other than, like I said, the Aquaman and the, I've forgotten already the other one that I've seen. But I would just spoil it right away. I did like this movie better than Captain America.
Yeah.
But also, those are two different, like, it's Warner Brothers versus DC, right?
Warner Brothers DC versus Marvel.
So this was was shot differently. Mm-hmm. It had a different dynamic. And like I said, it wasn't as sticky. So I liked it better. It had some problems, but it wasn't, I mean, I thought it was decent. I thought it was a good movie. So going into it, I'm pretty positive going into it. I'll put it that way.
I loved this movie for about the first 80% of it. The ending really left me a little deflated. For most of it, I loved this movie.
I think the end of the movie was a kind of a stopping point to get them to what I assume is going to be the next movie.
Sort of. I think this went into Justice League.
All right, fair enough.
I have no idea what they're going to be doing with the next movie, which is set in the 80s with Kristen Wiig as the villain.
That'd be interesting.
Yes, but we will be able to watch it streaming on December 25th on HBO Max.
And which one is that?
It's called Wonder Woman 84.
I saw that listed. It was supposed to be out in October originally.
I think it was supposed to come out in May originally.
Oh. Oops. Oh, this whole year has been nuts.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so. this was one of the last holdouts. So for 2020. But yeah, I mean, this was a huge movie, not only just because it was a sort of a big budget superhero movie, like just like right in the middle of the superhero movie boom, but one of the most famous characters in the world. And there was a lot of gender politics associated with it. DC was trying to capitalize on it being the first female-led superhero movie, and it had they hired a woman director, Patty Jenkins, who had a history with Marvel. We'll talk, you and Eric and I will talk more about that when we tackle Thor: The Dark World. But yeah, they were full guns blazing, getting the message out there that this was certainly a movie promoting feminist ideals. Which, well, as the father of two daughters, I thought was great.
I mean, it certainly sets in their minds that superheroes aren't just dudes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Since there's ostensibly an entire island nation of warriors that seem pretty substantial.
Completely self-sufficient, yep.
Yeah, so I did enjoy this movie, so I'm looking forward to diving in and discussing a little deeper. So
right on, let's do it. And we can just kind of skip past the bookends of the movie where it shows her in present day, because all that is trying to tie it into previous movies and the next movie, which don't really matter.
Well, the opening is basically young Diana, who is basically aspiring and spying on the training, and it's clear that she wants to be involved and included, and that leads up to her mother basically kind of telling her all about the actual origin, about how she was made from clay, and gives her a backstory and goes through all that and talks about Zeus versus Ares and lays all the groundwork, basically lays out all the pieces which are going to be the rest of the movie.
Right. Yeah. We get introduced to Hippolyta, Diana's mom, played by Connie Nielsen from Gladiator. One of my favorites, Antiope, was Robin Wright.
Robin Wright, yeah.
Princess Bride and lots of other things. She's always amazing. And she was great in this movie. I loved her in this movie.
She was, I got to say, all of them were very fierce. Yes. So it was nice to see. It's nice for me to see. So I enjoyed that aspect because it was clear they didn't chick it up too much. Like male directors would... I think the outfits would have been much more scant and,
that's a great exercise actually, because this was Patty Jenkins directed this one, but the Amazons were also featured in the Justice League movie directed by Zack Snyder, and Joss Whedon. If you Google a comparison of the costumes, you can definitely see female gaze versus male gaze fully on display.
Hmm. So you're saying that the outfits in the male directed one is tend to be a little more scant?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. I'm in no way surprised. I'm not surprised at all. But I appreciated that about this movie is that the women were women, but they weren't objectified as women. They were just happenstance that they were all women, because that fits with the origin story and Zeus and Ares and the crazy and the hey and the god killer and all of that, all the folklore that is brought to bear, as it were.
Yeah, I love the fact that she's told that she was sculpted from clay and brought to life by Zeus, and she's just cool. Like, all right, that makes sense.
Well, in their world, everything is magic.
Yeah,
and they're ruled by gods. So of course, why not? The gods have the power, right? Mm-hmm. Their mission, as charged, was that they are to influence men's hearts and return peace to the earth. That's kind of the theme.
Mm-hmm.
So. As Diana's growing up, then there's a lot of there's a training montage, right?
Yeah, her mother doesn't want her to train. There's some mystery surrounding what she really is, and I don't think it's ever really fully explained why it has to be so mysterious. But her mother does not want her involved in any conflict. And what I gathered was the more Diana fights and is known as a fighter, the sooner she will get on Ares' radar, and Ares will either want to corrupt her or kill her.
Well, that's what they kept saying throughout.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they kept saying, you know, if the stronger she gets, the more, you know, the closer Ares will get to finding her and blah, 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 blah. So, mm-hmm. Which leads you to believe if she was fighting on the island, if he would have been able to find the island. That was the one thing that I had the question. So is the island physically on Earth, but surrounded by this obscuring mist? Or is it like a dimensional portal?
Yeah, I think it's on Earth.
Because that's what I took from it. That yeah. It's all on Earth. It's just there's this magic field that obscures everybody away from it. Except when they go right through it.
Unless they find it by accident. Yeah, it's only protected by fog. So it's essentially London, which she says later that she hates.
Yeah. Yeah, as they're pulling into the harbor, she hates it. Let's see. They lay the groundwork. Diana's mother led a revolt that freed the women of enslavement from men. So they kind of, they're already kind of, what's the term? They're already setting themselves up as they want to be self-sufficient, and they want to make sure that it doesn't happen again, which is, I think, why you see some of the fighting scenes, which I really appreciated the fighting scenes around it, by the way, because there was that kind of that acrobatic Cirque du Soleil kind of jujitsu / matrixy stuff.
Yeah, the Amazon fighting style is very athletic. It's not just like standing in front of someone else and punching them as hard as you can.
No, it was a lot of like horseback riding, and then I'm going to do a cartwheel flip and shoot my arrow upside down while in motion.
In slow motion, yeah.
So
that's how I knew that I was going to be able to forgive just about anything in this movie when, like, during the first few slow motion, where there's the training montages or the first battle on the scene, you know, when they do the change in speeds, you know, either the speed up or the slow down. And I was still like, this isn't cheesy at all. This is awesome. It's amazing. I love it. Yeah. So while she's really getting pushed during training with Antiope, she does a weird thing where she puts her bracelets together and releases this concussive blast, which seems to surprise everybody, including herself.
Yeah, it's kind of like some fire starter transference magic, right? I'm super pissed, and I'm crossing my gauntlets or amulets or whatever they are, and then this shockwave of destruction.
Yeah, it's an indication that she's got more powers than even the typical Amazon.
And then there's more folklore that Diana's mother talks about. Zeus destroyed Ares enough to stop him, but not sure that he was killed. Of course he wasn't, because there wouldn't be a story. Zeus died, but in the process he created the Amazon to protect and defend against Ares, should he return again. We know he will. And then Diana is shown the God Killer, or what she is told is the God Killer in all of what her mother and her aunt, I guess, are they sisters? They are sisters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So it'd be her aunt. I took 3 pages of notes. So
nice.
So then Diana has super training. She has the gauntlets, which go kaboom, which then follows into the plane crashing with Flourish into the hidden zone.
Yeah, Steve Trevor. Yeah, no, it was a fun, what was a fighting, like, was it like a biplane? It was really,
yeah, I thought it was like a German biplane.
Yeah, like Red Baron kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, very much. It was very rinky-dink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just comes crashing down, and Chris Pine gets sucked underwater, and the only one that sees him is Diana.
Well, I think the only one that cares is Diana, because she's the only one who ever really looks out across the land. Everybody else is busy training and sparring and being back in the village, which as even as a child, they show her running around the village and not being really content with wherever she's at, right?
Mm-hmm.
Including jumping off of ledges and things like that, being acrobatic and not looking where she's going.
Right.
Perhaps not paying full attention by being a little impulsive and whimsical.
And yet never getting injured.
Now, which is interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
The plane crashes down with quite the flourish. Steve Trevor is then rescued by Diana, who brings him back to the group, or brings him back to the beach, which then is followed by a whole bunch of other warmonger crew that come right through, right? They come through the portal as well, or the fog or the mist or whatever the magical veil is that moves them from one area to another.
A German unit was following Steve Trevor, and so they also find Themyscira.
So this kind of reverse Normandy beach thing where all right. The Amazon are on the, you know, they see the invaders and the Germans are approaching the beach. And of course they're after Steve, but it seemed disproportionate to me how many of them there were for Steve.
Well, he stole something and then was escaping, so they were chasing him, right?
Yeah, but that was a huge amount of force for one dude. Like, would you really send that much troop after one guy? Especially if he's in a plane, and they were all in boats.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that got me. Like, you're
they
traveling.
They really and... wanted that notebook back.
I was going to say, you're chasing a guy in a boat. After a plane, I think the plane's a little faster than the boat, just a little bit, just a bit. But anyway, it's just one of those things. So they have a big clash on the beach, and of course the defenders come to protect the invasion of men because they think this is the war that's been brought to them, right? They believe it's their war.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand.
And they're the Amazons are amazing warriors, but they're still like fighting with swords and bows and arrows against firearms.
Well, they don't have any Kevlar and they don't have any flak jackets and they don't have any bulletproof vests because I don't think they have a concept of firearms. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
They're very quickly disabused of such notions.
Yeah. This actually surprised me because I thought that, I don't have a huge history of reading Wonder Woman comic books. Probably my biggest relationship with Wonder Woman was from the 70s TV show.
Linda Carter.
Very, very formative in my early years. But I just thought all Amazons were like kind of superheroes like Diana, but. Apparently not. I mean, she is essentially Superman on Earth, but the rest of the Amazons are not. They can get shot and wounded and in ways that Diana can't.
Yeah,
which surprised me the first time I watched this movie.
They're just super warriors, but they're not like Diana. Diana is seemingly pretty fairly invincible.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's a question. Is she like Superman? Is she invincible? Well, she can be injured. We saw that she could get injured, but she regenerates fast.
Yeah, she's pretty super. I mean, she can't fly on her own, but she sure can jump far and super strong, almost invulnerable. Yeah, she's It's kind of the problem with DC superheroes, I think, compared to Marvel superheroes. They all have, like, just really godlike powers. Superman's the most outrageous, but Aquaman is the same thing. Wonder Woman, they're all just extra. Hmm. Without very many vulnerabilities. Which I think makes it harder to write a dramatic story. It means you have to keep upping the ante on bigger and bigger supervillains in a way that is probably not as interesting.
That analysis is interesting. I think I saw a comic a couple weeks ago, a comic strip where they were basically making fun of Batman. All the villains come and shoot Batman in all his gear. And why don't they just shoot him in the face where he's not shielded?
Yeah. Well, that's why Batman was, I think, always the most compelling DC character. Because he was just a dude. And he was normal. And he could be hurt.
He was like the Jim Rockford of superheroes.
Yeah.
Because he got injured and beat up.
Yeah, I mean, he had his back broken by Bane.
I don't mean to laugh.
Yeah, so Antiope dies on the beach, which is a bummer.
Yeah, but she was great. But Diana is mucking. She really kind of lays in the background during this battle for the first, what, half of it?
Yeah, she's never been in a real fight.
But then she's drawn into the action. And you do see the warriors, you see them, you see the whole Amazon crew really mm-hmm. take, I mean, they are defending this with their life, quite literally. So they take this threat very seriously. Steve basically is trying to protect Diana, not understanding that she's going to kick his ass more than anybody else's if he gets in her way. But nobody knowing that she's invincible, ostensibly. Not even her.
Yeah, it gave me Force Awakens vibes. Did you ever watch The Force Awakens?
Uh-uh.
Star Wars movie?
Nope.
One of my favorite things about that movie is they introduce this character, Rey. And they also introduce this other character, Finn. And when they meet... they have to escape the bad guys together. And Rey is a very strong, independent character. And Finn is trying to rescue her, and she doesn't need rescuing. So he keeps like grabbing her hand and being like, come on. And in the midst of everything around her, she's always like, quit grabbing my hand. It's great. I was waiting for something like that from Diana, but she's actually too nice at this point.
And the battle, you know, Antiope is killed, right, on mm-hmm. the beach. Yep. And she tells, in her dying breath, she tells Diana to wield the God Killer. It's time to wield the God Killer. And the battle's over. All the Germans are dead. And... they all capture Steve because he's a male, and they believe that he can't be there by accident. He has to be there for a purpose. So they bring him up to whatever chamber.
He's also dressed in the same uniform as all of the other people they just killed.
That's also true. So very confusing. And they don't understand the conflict anyway.
Right.
Because the geopolitics of the time... or of any time, really, would be foreign to them, I guess. It wouldn't matter. So they bring him to some kind of main chamber or main hall or whatever, where they want to talk to him about what's going on. They want him to tell it. And, of course, he says, well, I'm a spy. I'm not going to tell you. Or I don't think he admits he's a spy yet, but he basically won't tell them. And, of course, they whip out the lasso of truth.
Yes.
Which makes me giggle. It's a little silly.
It's very silly. It has an official name, right? The Rope of Hestia or something?
Yes.
But yeah, Lasso of Truth.
It doesn't make it any more silly.
Nope. I'm not a fan of the Justice League movie. But there is a really good bit in it where they're going to the final battle, like for the first time as a team. And Aquaman is the one who is, you know, acts the toughest and most independent, doesn't want to be part of a team because he can handle everything himself. And then when they're heading towards the final showdown, he kind of gives a nice speech about how he really appreciates everybody and being part of a team. And he's really digging having new friends, you know, that kind of vibe. And the bit is, it turns out he's accidentally sitting on the lasso of truth.
Boy, that was a long way for them to go for a joke.
Yeah, well, it was one of the bright spots in that horrible movie.
Oh.
So it was worth it.
Ooh, that's bad. Let's see. The Amazons use the lasso of truth. Steve is forced to confess that he's a spy and tells them the whole story of the Poison Notebook and Dr. Maru.
And he describes it as the war to end all wars.
Which should have been my clue that it was World War I. right there, it should have been my clue. Tells you how he was paying attention. What does it say about the Germans that they're just always warmongering?
Yeah, well, easy villain.
Full disclosure, those are our people, by the way. So,
yeah, you mean our
lineage,
our ancestry?
Yes.
Yeah.
Not very far back, as it turns out.
Nope.
After the interrogation, Steve is allowed to float in their little tidy wading pool thing, which I don't know is healing properties or something. I don't know. And then we have this whole sticky comedy routine, which was not necessary, about his nudity and maleness and average size and hoo-ha and all that.
Yeah.
Was that necessary at all? I don't think it added anything to the story.
No, it was kind of cringy, and it made Diana seem more than just naive. It made her seem kind of dumb, which I didn't like.
Made her seem clueless, which maybe not inaccurate considering she's been sheltered on an island with no dudes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it just seemed clumsy. And then the watch, and they're talking about time and the watch, and it was tonally different. So it was tonally different than the rest of the movie up to this point.
Yeah. And, you know, she's, the character is very, like, ignorant of modern ways, very similar to Captain America, actually. And I think similar to the casting of a Chris Evans, I think this was a home run in casting for Wonder Woman. Cause it is a character, again, that has to be very earnest without being cheesy. And I think she pulls it off really well.
Oh yeah. No, her sincerity, in her acting seemed to be pretty, I mean, I believed it. Sorry. I was looking at Lucy Davis. Cause I was trying to think, Lucy Davis shows up in a little bit here in the movie. And I'm trying to think what I know her so much from. I've seen her in many things. She's been a ton of stuff. Studio 60, that's where I know her from. All right.
Who does she play in this movie?
Candy. Was it Elizabeth Candy? The secretary, Steve's secretary. Etta Candy, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I thought her name was Etta. I didn't realize her last name was Candy.
Yeah, Etta Candy.
Okay, yeah. She was very funny.
I think she's always very funny. On Studio 60, she's hilarious and funny. I think she's always funny. I always like her. Something about her, I don't know what about her, but I'm always pleased to see her. It's one of those weird, like, I don't know. Welcome to my head. All right, let's see. Da-da-da. So Diana is now convinced that Ares is out there, and she wants to go back, and she makes a deal with Steve because the Amazon crew decide they're not going to let him go back, right? They want to kill him.
Yep, because they don't want him to let anybody know that he found this island.
Yeah, so they want him dead, and she basically makes a deal with Steve that she will get him out safely, But he has to take her to Ares. And he just kind of yada yada is like, okay. He just plays along.
What do you think of Chris Pine?
I haven't seen him. So my problem is that, how do I parse this? I got to think about this. So I don't think this was a serious role. Do you?
No.
So my problem is I don't think I've seen him in a serious role because I've only seen him in this and in the Star Trek movies. And did I see him in something else? I'm trying to think what else I've seen him in. So I don't know that I've seen him in a serious role. So my problem is I didn't ever see him as serious. And that's a problem because I think you're meant to believe this character is serious, but I can't take him seriously. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, he was in Unstoppable, the Tony Scott, Denzel Washington movie. So that was pretty good in.
I didn't see that.
I enjoyed him as Kirk in the Star Trek movies, even though the second and third ones were pretty bad. But he was also in Z for Zachariah, the movie based on one of my favorite childhood books. He was really good in that. Also, he was in Hell or High Water. Super good in that.
He was in Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit.
Yes.
So,
again, probably a better performance than that movie deserved.
And I think I think I recall correctly, although, you know, my memory is not what it was. I think he was good in that movie. Not great, but that wasn't a great movie either, as I recall. So,
yeah, I think he's really good in just about everything.
I think my problem is I don't know if it's him in this movie that he's not serious in a serious part, or if it's the writing. So it's hard for me to tell. So I think he's good and I think I like him, but I haven't seen enough other stuff with him being serious that I can, you know what I mean?
Well, I think he does a really good job in this movie because he is playing essentially a sidekick who thinks he's the leading man. And I think he, as an actor, he pulls that off really well because he acts like the take charge protagonist, but also is able to pull back that performance when he needs to become a secondary character and let the Wonder Woman-ness of it shine through.
So I guess you can give me a list of the next couple, 2-3 Chris Pine movies, the serious ones that I should put on my list next. I know you're going to say Z for Zachariah, so we'll go with that.
I wouldn't. That goes into my True Detective season 2 bucket of things that I think only I like. But I would say Hell or High Water is a really good movie. I actually want to do that with the three of us at some point.
Okay. No, I think Margot Robbie in Chiwetel Ejiofor, whatever his name is, I slaughtered that, I know. Mm-hmm. That seems like a fine movie.
I thought it was really good. It is.
It looks like a really small movie.
Yeah,
it is. It's just really self-contained.
Yeah. I mean, well, the book only had two characters. The movie has three. But yeah, I don't know if you ever read the book, but.
It's like apocalyptic. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Post-nuclear
war.
I think I read it, but I was probably in single digits, I want to say.
Yeah.
So too. My memory, again, memory, not what it was.
Yeah, but I read that book so many times, I almost knew it by heart. But the movie takes some wild departures, including aging up the main protagonist.
Well, since I don't remember the book, that might be fine for me to go and watch it then. So, but I'll put that on my list. Back to the plot. So Diana goes, retrieves all of her gear, what she believes is the God Killer. She gets Steve and they head off to the dock. And then they're confronted, of course, by the whole group, who she has to confront her mom. And her mom doesn't want her, you know, her mom, I guess, finally relents and says, I know you're going to go regardless. So I get it. Not happy, but I get it.
Yeah. And again, should have been a cheesy scene, but it worked.
Yeah, I think. Again, I think the only cheese has been Chris Pine this far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And which is, again, that's why I have a hard time, you know, with him. I'm like, he always has the cheese. So Diana and Steve make it off the island
in a boat. Yeah, and Hippolyta actually gives Diana Antiope's, like, little tiara thing, which is, we now identify that as the Wonder Woman symbol.
Yeah. And then they have they go back to the cheesiness on the boat where about sleeping together,
mm-hmm.
which was, again, was unnecessary and silly. And
no, but I thought Gal Gadot was very charming.
She's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's great. Her entire performance is great. Although she is a little... I think the character is a little one note, though, is the problem.
Yep.
I don't think it's her. I think it's how they wrote it. I think it's the character. The depth isn't there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, she is extremely single-minded and overwhelmingly self-assured. Even in the face of confronting a whole new world she knows nothing about. She doesn't have any doubts about what she is doing. Which with less charisma, I think would make her really unlikable.
Yeah. And so she's a unitasker. She only knows one thing. She's been raised for one thing. She's been trained for one thing. She's been told one thing her whole life. And so that she's called to action. That's the only thing she's going to do. And everything else is just tough, right? Everything around her is just tough. So, yeah.
And it's for that very reason that Alton Brown gave this movie half a star.
Nice. That's nicely done. They had a little scene on the boat. They had little jokes about sleeping together, not sleeping together. And Ben, again, the other genital reference again, where about how he's not average, right? He's not the average man. They make it to London and she is underwhelmed.
In that scene where they're talking about sleeping together, she's pretty savage because she tells him that the Amazons are advanced enough that they have determined that men are essential for procreation, but almost useless when it comes to pleasure.
It's a little biting.
Mm-hmm. I think it really hurts his feelings.
I imagine it made many of the heterosexual dudes in the audience uncomfortable who were there with their girlfriends.
Yes.
Unless perhaps they're a little more metrosexual, but, you know.
That had to have been one of the biggest laughs in the movie theater.
But was it dudes or was it women that were laughing?
I bet it was everybody.
Oh, okay. They make it to London and they meet up with Etta Candy, Steve's secretary. But before that, they deliver the notebook, right? They have to get her, Diana, like normal street clothes.
Fashion show at lunch.
Which, again, a little over the top and crazy ridiculous, but whatever. So, is this male fan service at this point?
No, I don't think so because, I think the big joke is that, she hates all of the outfits because they're not functional.
That's a fair point.
They're trying to make her fit in as a woman of the times, but she wants something she can go to battle in.
When so they go through a bunch of outfits, and she picks the most functional and most male-like outfit, which I guess in those times was probably, they didn't have functional outfits for females. They only wanted them adorned so they could be admired or used. So,
yep. Yeah. So I think that was the point of the fashion show.
And as they're walking off to go and deliver the notebook, Steve notices that they're being observed in many places, and he doesn't panic yet, but he kind of warns Diana that I'm not sure what's going on, but let's just keep going. And then they end up in an alley, and that's when they're basically ambushed by a whole bunch of guys who want the book back. And this is when we get to see they draw their guns and threaten, and that's when Diana uses her magic amulets or wrist guards or whatever you want to call them to deflect the bullets, and they have a fist fight, and there's back and forth and some melee, and basically results in everybody being injured and unconscious until the German dude is actually suicides by cyanide.
And yeah, and that's first the start of the action, when the first dude shoots and she blocks the bullet with her wrist brace and catches it. And that is it has to be a direct homage to Richard Donner's Superman movie. Right? And there was a scene early on when Clark Kent gets mugged in an alley and he kind of catches a bullet.
Oh, I didn't catch that. So
it had to be. Had to be.
I can see that.
Maybe he was even saving Lois. So they kind of flipped the gender dynamics there.
You might be right. You're probably right.
It's been a while since I've watched Superman.
Like, you don't have it committed to memory.
No, that's Superman 2.
No, I understand. I know Superman 2 is forever etched in your brain.
If you want to talk to me about the Niagara Falls scene, I could go on for about 25 minutes. But
so after the alley excursion into melee, we cut to Ludendorff meeting with Dr. Maru in her lab in a very sinister, just a whole bunch of creepy.
Yeah, because the Diana Steve dynamic is very playful, a little corny, but very like quippy and fun. And then you get Ludendorff and Maru, and it's just dark.
Yeah, but
dark
they,
and bleak and.
But they get loopy and fun a little bit later on.
Well, yeah, because they get so like horny about how destructive their gas is.
Right. They're giddy at murder.
Mm-hmm. They love it.
Yeah, it's kind of a balance and counterbalance kind of thing.
And this is the first time she gives him like her little like angel dust, right?
Right, the little blue pills. I guess yeah. They're big blue pills, actually.
Yeah.
So instead of being boner pills, they're super enriching, strengthen. I don't know what they're actually supposed to be, other than they really amp him up.
Mm-hmm.
Probably meth.
Yep. Maybe some PCP mixed in.
Shroom stick. So we have that kind of interlude where Dr. Moreau is talking about the formula, and she thinks she's going to have a breakthrough. And in the meantime, she's got this PEP formula that she's pimping that, right? Mm-hmm. So then we cut back to Diana and Steve, who go and meet the Armistice Committee. Is that what this is? I'm not sure what you would call it.
I think it's the War Council. And then, but they are focused on signing an armistice.
And we're introduced to Sir Patrick, right?
Yes, Professor Lupin.
Professor Lupin
from the Harry Potter movies.
Ah, okay. The men in the war room, or whatever room it is, are really not thrilled with Diana being there because women shouldn't be in there because it's a war room. And that's no place for women.
Yeah, a lot of like stuffy British dudes harumphing. Wow, why is she here?
Which in the back of my mind is not that different than today, maybe in Parliament, but I don't know. That's probably not fair.
It's probably fair.
Teresa Mays might tell you differently, but so they basically they give the notebook to Sir Patrick, and since the writing is in another language, what was it in Sumerian?
Ottoman, was it Sumerian? I think it was Ottoman,
something, Sumerian? Some other language. What does it say? Sumerian. Since the writing is Sumerian, basically Diana starts to translate it for them because magically she knows, what did she say? She knows hundreds of languages.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically tells the group that it's a formula. It's a formula of a hydrogen terribleness, which turns out to be mustard gas.
Yeah, like a corrosive mustard gas, which will eat through gas mass.
Sounds pretty unpleasant to me. But.
Agreed.
You know. And they're pretty much dismissed from Diana's definitely dismissed from the war room. But Sir Patrick, I think, shuts them down and says, the armistice is what we're doing. Like, we will have an end to the war. This will end the war.
Right. And Steve Trevor, does not believe that the Germans will actually sign it. They think they're just stringing the Allies along until they can get their weapon of mass destruction ready.
Which turns out to be the case, but he and Diana head out, and he decides that they're going to have to go this on their own.
Yeah, they actually have a fun fight outside of the war room once they're kicked out, because he has capitulated and said, okay, it's fine. And she's mad at him for agreeing to it, and he tells her that they're gonna go anyway, and she's just taken aback that he lied like that, and his response is, "I'm a spy. That's what I do."
But she doesn't know what a spy is, really.
Right.
And that's when we have the cute little scene where he lassos himself to tell her the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, again, there's the cheese.
Yep.
Is that where they give Etta the shield and the sword?
No, they gave that to her after she finally picked out her outfit.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm blurring things together. So they head off to a bar to get a crew, because that's, of course, that's how you get a crew. Just ask Han Solo, right?
Yeah.
And we're introduced to more characters, and we get a little backstory of each of them, and so now we're meeting the rest of the crew, and now we have a ball game, as it were.
Yeah, and they're all kind of people you've seen before. I mean, you've got Charlie, who is from Trainspotting. You've got Samir, he's just kind of one of those guys.
Yeah. I've seen him in other things. I just don't know what.
Yeah. I mean, he works. I mean, he's in things like, he was in John Wick 3. He was on Lost back in the day. He's been around.
And then also the chief.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Having not read nor can I remember the comic books, is this representative?
No idea.
Okay. It just seems a little shoehorned to me.
I think it's it is a diverse group of people in an era where I don't think diverse groups of people really hung out a bunch.
Oh, he was born in 1978. Eugene Brave Rock.
Yeah, his name. I liked him. He was good.
Yeah, he was fine. I felt bad for him because I think he got relegated to having little to no dialogue or action.
Yeah, I mean, his...
They boiled him down to smoke signals.
Smoke signals and wisdom.
Yeah.
That was a little tough.
Yeah, that was... Yeah. Especially watching it on Thanksgiving.
Yes, good call.
So I was feeling a little white guilt, perhaps. It's one of those things. Yes. And so we're introduced to the whole how everybody knows each other and everybody's kind of shortcomings, and we have the nice back and forth with Samir and Diana because they have like a language off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they keep switching languages, and then Diana talks back to Samir in a language that he clearly doesn't know.
Yeah, it was good.
And then they kind of talk about that, and then there's a fight in the bar as they introduce Charlie, right?
Yep.
And then
Sir Patrick shows up
and says, I didn't want you to do this, but I do want you to do this, and here's money, so I'm going to fund you. So here you go. So you're not doing this, but you're doing this, so go.
Very fishy.
Yeah, well, I didn't catch it, so I just went with it. And is this where the guy comes back to shoot Charlie after the... Does that happen before Sir Patrick shows up or after? Somewhere in there, they have this little comedic jaunt where...
The guy she kicks all the way across the bar.
Right, and Samir is like, I'm both frightened and excited. Which was a good line. That made me chuckle out loud, so... and then we cut back to Ludendorff meeting with some of his fellow evil henchmen.
he's going full on Red Skull in this scene.
That's what I was expecting. I was expecting to see the Red Skull. I was a little excited for a moment. Again, because I hadn't realized this is World War One. And he basically, Ludendorff goes and tells them he has a way to win the war. And they're all convinced that the armistice is the way to go. They're out of food. Their forces are not well. They're not well supplied. And so they're going to sign the armistice within the day. And they're saying that they need to end the war. And Ludendorff says, you've made a grave mistake. And throws a gas mask down and walks out the door. Throws the gas bomb in, bars the door as he and Dr. Maruse stand outside giggling. And they have a little discussion about the gas mask as the smoke is filling the chamber because she says,
they're so mean.
I know. She's, you know, the gas mask won't help them. And Ludendorff says, yeah, but they don't know that. Which is, I guess it's evil genius. But it is absolutely, it is cruel, and it's what you would expect from a Cruella de Vil.
Yeah. Yeah, and she is so aroused when she's looking through the glass.
She's giggling.
All of their faces melt off.
She's giggling with giddy delight in the window at them as they're dying. So, so then they head to the front, which Diana's a little confused about why they call it the front, but nonetheless... They head to the front and they start wandering through the trenches. And Diana is kind of horrified by the whole process.
Well, it looks pretty horrific.
It is pretty horrific. And she walks past a German woman who starts screaming at her about what's going on. And of course, Diana can understand her because she speaks hundreds of languages.
I think they're actually Belgian.
Yeah, that would make sense. And Diana's horrified. She says, this is terrible. This is horrific. This is awful. We have to help them.
We have to do something.
We have to stop everything that we're doing to help these couple of people.
Mm-hmm. And Steve Trevor, he's very, focused on accomplishing the mission. Because from his perspective, they can't do really anything at the front. All they can do is stop the war so that they don't have to have a front anymore. So even though they are aligned with the ultimate outcome, the way they want to accomplish it are in direct conflict with each other.
And he's trying to convince her, like, no, 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 trust me. We can't help these people. We have to help more people. And she doesn't accept that as a premise. She doesn't accept the premise at all. She thinks she'll just stop and help these people and then she'll go on. Because that's what you do. Because she doesn't know how any of this works.
Right.
So they have a discussion.
Steve is just casually dropping little information nuggets like, they've been fighting here for years and they haven't moved their lines. So just got to move on. And that's actually something just really horrific to think about, of a battle being waged in trenches, hundreds of feet apart from each other for years with just no quarter given on either side. Just scores and scores of hundreds of deaths for no gain.
And all the concussive blasts through the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you get
PTSD of just having to, if you're lucky enough to live through that.
All the trench warfare and, but even though Steve is trying to convince her that we're going to go and do this and we're going to go here and we're going to do this, and she says, "Nope, I'm going." Shortest distance, 2 points is a line, and she just goes.
Yep.
And
the first reveal of her outfit.
Yeah. And so she's fierce. She goes right for it. She's just right up for the snipers. And for all of the people firing, she just takes it all, heads right through as the front line, forges a way forward. The rest of the crew take off after her when they realize that she is basically deflecting or drawing all the fire, as they can come up and position themselves in a way to aid and start picking off the Germans.
Yeah, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this scene, but I think this is the best scene in the entire movie. I love it so much. Just everything from the score to the way it's shot, the reveal of her walking up the ladder onto the battlefield, and just how brave she is, and just what a sincere do-gooder she is. Just the way it's all put together. It's so great. It actually it makes me emotional watching it, even though I've seen it probably 3 or 4 times now. Each time I love it.
Also, there's a great use of color.
Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, to great effect, the color is another theme, which is kind of throughout this movie. The colors are there's some very vivid colors, but they're very specific.
Yes. Yeah, because it's the background is always really bleak and gray and brown, and but this is such a triumphant scene. I think all the way through the retaking of the town, I love it. I mean, it really made my heart swell watching the scene again.
And. She makes it through. They take down all the enemy soldiers, and then she takes out the tower, right? Is that when she jumps into the sniper tower?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have so many iconic moments just from this extended scene. You know, the first of her climbing up out of the trench, and then later as she jumps through the wall in slow motion with her shield out in front of her. And then when her crew does the the Amazon shield toss so she can get up in the tower. It's also great.
It's very well done. This part of the movie was really well done.
Yes.
And the action was, I mean, I really appreciated, because this, I think one of the things about this movie is it's slow in parts, and the slow is necessary because they're trying to cram all this information into you. Although it was uncomfortably slow at a few parts, but then there's these action set pieces that just, I know that I will have to go back and rewatch it, because I know there's no way I got even half of what was going on. I don't know that there was any way I could. So, because there's just so much, because it looks huge. The set looks huge. And I don't know if that's accurate or not, but it looked, you know, it was very, very atmospheric. It was very large in volume. So, let's see. They have their little victory, and they talk about children and how he's never had children, right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And it starts to snow. She's never seen snow.
He talks to her about dancing, teaches her to dance, and they have that old cheese.
They are staring longingly at each other as they are falling in love in the middle of a war.
And Steve.
So you know he's going to die.
Yeah. Steve, I mean, you know they're going to sleep together.
Do they?
I don't know. I think they do. They end up in the hotel room together. Hmm. I think it's implied. It's never visible. Maybe not. Maybe Diana's, I don't know, maybe she's too pure. Or she doesn't even consider him as a sex object, because she just doesn't consider any men sex objects. I don't know. But Steve finds out that Ludendorff is going to be at this magic festival ball gala thing, right? And they have this, again, this semi-comedic moment where he calls in to Sir Patrick's office and Etta answers the phone, and they kind of locate where he is versus where Ludendorff is, and Sir Patrick tells him not to go, but he, of course, we know he's going to go.
You're right. Of course, he has to.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some fun A-team shenanigans with Steve trying to infiltrate into the gala. And then Diana just mugs a lady.
It did make me chuckle, because I knew exactly what was happening. So, and it's hard to know if Diana's just knocking people out or if she's just killing them. So that's the question.
She's too good to murder.
Is she though? Because she murdered the guy. I mean, that's the thing. Is she too good to murder? I think later on she murders some people. I think she murdered some Germans.
Well, I mean, if you consider killing people in battle, murder.
Okay.
I think it's different than luring a lady into the woods and snapping her neck. But yeah, another, as you mentioned before, another brilliant use of vibrant color when she's in her amazing blue gown.
It's like royal peacock blue, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, with the god killer down her back.
Stuffed in her spine. It looked very fashionable, though.
Yeah, so I when this came out on video, my wife was very interested in watching it, so we watched it together, and she loved it. And one of the ways I knew she loved this movie is after it was over, I saw her on her phone googling "God Killer Sword Back Tattoo."
That's awesome.
Which she found out, while maybe an excellent idea, was not an original idea.
Also, probably a really painful idea.
In the moment, it was worth it to her.
Yeah. I understand that the spine is a very, very sensitive and painful area to get a tattoo over.
Yeah.
I have no experience. Anything that's
bony.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with, I'm gonna decline that one. But good for her for looking. I mean, that's braver than me. I'm always afraid to do web searches like that, because you never know what's going to come up. it's like Google Rodeo. You never know. They smuggle into the gala. Anyway, mm-hmm. to the shindig. They make it into the shindig, and Steve is now smuggled past because Samir helps him basically pretend to be an idiot. Sorry. Steve helps Samir pretend to be an idiot and gets him smuggled through without an invitation. They end up in the gala, and he ponies up to Dr. Maru and starts romancing her in a frighteningly convincing manner.
For a bit. It turns out he might be not a great spy.
But for a few moments, he has her captivated. He has Dr. Maru captivated and enthralled. And
yeah.
And very titillated. She's very rapt in his attention.
Well, he's so good looking and charming, and he's really laying on the flattery.
Also very Aryan.
Yes. Yeah, good call for somebody employed by the German army.
Yeah, so you would think that would be a pretty big necessity. But
although, was that an important ideal before Hitler?
No, I don't think so. But I don't know. I wasn't there. Who knows?
Consult our Casablanca podcast for historical details.
Well, I was also going to submit that I don't know that there was a lot of genetic diversity in Germany. So there might have been a lot of blonde hair, blue eyed Germans anyway, just blatantly. So, but I don't know. But coming from German lineage to a degree, we have blue eyes and we had blondish hair when we were younger. So,
yes, but we live in darkness 7 months out of the year,
which is also true. So Steve is schmoozing Dr. Maru, and she's pretty much into him up to the point where we see Diane in the background, who has smuggled herself in by stealing a dress. And she has the attention of most everybody in the room, including Steve, which Dr. Maru notices and shuts him down in no uncertain terms. Just like, boom, done. Drop kicks him. Done. And Ludendorff enters, and Diana sees him and makes a beeline for him, and he sees her and he makes a beeline for her, and they have a interesting little conversation about why they're there.
Because she is convinced he's Ares and right. She's going to kill him.
They have a little I'm not sure what it is. A little bit of angry interchange.
They have a banter about the understanding of gods.
And he wanders off. Ludendorff's done.
Yeah, because he's going to go gas a village.
Yeah, kill some people. And Diana is immediately, nope, I'm going to go kill him. And Steve stops her.
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand. Which then she is not happy.
Especially now, after she finds out that by stopping her from killing him, allowed him to go gas an entire village.
Yeah.
Saddam Hussein style.
So isn't she a lot stronger than Steve?
Yeah, for sure.
How exactly did he stop her?
I think by surprising her.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure she could have overpowered him if she wanted. So that's just a thing.
She obviously didn't want to.
Yeah. They figure out that what is this where they head off? Like Diana takes off.
Yeah.
After Ludendorff, because Ludendorff leaves the facility, right?
Yeah, he sends the gas bomb to the village, and then he takes off back to his factory.
Yeah, and Diana's off to the factory after Ludendorff.
She goes to the village to save people.
That's right.
But she's too late, which makes her even more mad at Steve.
Which, everybody's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is she immune to the gas? Seemingly.
Yep.
But he
has no effect on her.
He's clearly not.
Right. Yeah.
And then they have a... Is this where they have the scene where she's horrified about all the death?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple scenes like that. But yeah, she gets super pissed, and then we see the chief's smoke signals, and which indicates that he's found the factory. So she takes off on horseback, right?
Yes.
And doffs the gown.
And this is where she reaches the factory, and she finds Ludendorff, Ares, who she believes,
mm-hmm.
up in one of the towers, right?
Yep.
And they have he meths up again, or blue pills, or whatever it is.
So at this point, did you think he was Ares?
I never thought he was Ares.
Yeah.
At no point in the movie did I think he was Ares, ever.
Did you think she was going to find out that Ares wasn't a real thing and become really disillusioned by her upbringing?
I was fairly convinced there was going to be an Ares, but I didn't know how they were going to shoehorn it in. I couldn't wrap my brain around how or where it was going to happen, or even if it was going to happen in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying not to guess too far ahead, but I at no point thought that he was Ares ever, simply because he was affected by Dr. Mu's little potions.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is a better movie if there actually is no Ares.
It's a very, very much darker movie if there's no Ares.
Yes.
I mean, it becomes really dark.
Mm-hmm.
Not just comic book dark, but really dark. But you may be right. You probably are right there. Without the Ares character, it would... No? Yeah, you're right. Because I think
it would give her an opportunity to have some growth and figure out how she's really going to fight evil on a more granular level when she can't put one big bad face on it to confront.
And also would make her confront the horror that humanity, warring humanity, is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is the ham-handed thing that the whole Ares vehicle tries to cast upon everyone, is that you know, war is bad, but it's also human, and if we weren't as terrible human beings as we were, there wouldn't be war.
Right.
I mean, that whole social commentary, which I understand, it's derived from the comic books, maybe, I don't know. But it was ham-handed and very obvious. It was not in any way couched. It was not subtle at all. It was like a whole bunch of scissors, right?
Right.
Yeah.
As you can probably tell, this is where the movie started to lose me.
Well, at this point, the movie's almost 2.5 hours long.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And it's as good as it is up until this point, it's a lot of work. It's an exhausting watch, yes. I think.
Well, I think part of it is you have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. This isn't a movie you can miss parts of. Right. There are a couple parts, obviously, we've talked about that could go away, but not very much, and those scenes aren't very long. And there isn't a lot that could just be pulled out of this movie to make it shorter. But when we get here, and she has the confrontation with Ludendorff, and they have a little fight, and he's all amped out. But so it's a pretty decent fight, right?
Yeah.
But he says that she's not going to kill him, and she kills him anyway.
Yep.
She has a really good acting on her part, because she has quite the reaction when he dies and nothing happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I wanted them to explore that.
Yeah, because she was real. That messed her up. She was not expecting that. I don't think she knew what she was expecting, but she wasn't expecting that. So her whole kind of her whole quest and universe in this foray into the world of men has not gone the way she thought it would. And did not resolve, which she had hoped for, which was her whole goal to coming to the men world, right? Is to save them. And she hasn't done that. So she's disappointed. She's disappointed in herself, I assume, with the implication, but also disappointed in humanity as a whole.
Yeah. And she's very, at this moment, she's very confused and is probably relitigating all of her experiences and teachings.
And so Diana's kind of doing some soul searching, and
all the while the rest of the gang, very similar to Captain America, actually, they have to try and stop the death plane.
The death plane full of mustard gas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the super mustard gas.
So they're on the ground and they're all gas masked and they're going in and out. They're having their little yuck scenes, right? Mm-hmm. Again, cheese. And she sees Sir Patrick in the tower.
Yeah, he just appears there.
And she's a little confused and then she gets it.
He's been Ares all along.
And he basically is trying to coerce her to come with him.
Argument that made no sense.
I'm not the bad guy. Humanity is the bad guy. Just leave the bad guy. Leave humanity to themselves. We'll go do whatever we're going to do together.
Well, he was trying to convince her to let the war rage on, because at the end of the war, there will finally be peace. So if she wants a peaceful world of men, she needs to let war run rampant first. Which I suppose, if everybody kills themselves, there's no one left to war with.
I guess there's nothing to defend if they're all dead. That's true. And she pulls the sword and tries to kill him. And it turns out that as she seems to be pretty confused as to why the god killer doesn't kill him, he basically tells her,
he just shatters the sword. He puts up his hand and
it's gone.
Instead of stabbing him, the sword just shatters.
And he says, well, the sword's not the god killer, you are.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. So she was created by Zeus as a weapon. Which is why she has all her fancy powers. Well, yeah, and then there's a huge CGI fight, which I found to be actually very boring.
It was a little ridiculous as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the rest of the gang is sealing the plane, and Steve has to fly it away from people and detonate it. So he dies as a hero.
Ares uses the lasso on Diana, basically, to show her what it would be like if everybody blows up.
Mm-hmm.
And what they could do together. But she's not convinced. She's not going to fall for it. She's going to kill him. And then we have the big, stupid, dumb, ridiculous fight scene, which made no sense.
Right. And the only way she prevailed is she finally got angry enough. Right?
Yes. She did a Charlie Firestarter thing and just, right?
Yeah. She redirected his power back at him and finally somehow killed him. But after some of the other battle scenes, I found this to be extremely underwhelming.
I found it tedious.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially after, like you said, it was such a long movie and an emotionally wrought movie to this point. Watching two gods battle each other without without any foundation of what their powers actually are, how anything works. It even though it was a climax of the movie, it felt such low stakes.
Well, I never
felt... There's no way she's going to lose, and it dragged on and on and on.
That was going to be my point. There's no... I've never felt she was in peril at all. So it was predetermined in my mind that she was going to kill him, which the whole movie sets up from the beginning that she's going to kill him because she's ostensibly built to kill him.
Right.
So there was no tension, I think, is the problem. There was no tension in the fight, and so I wasn't invested in the outcome because I was predetermined. And I never, she was never in jeopardy. So, they have that weird, towards the end of the fight, they have that weird, you know, Dr. Maru, she could kill Dr. Maru for all the evil that she's done, but she doesn't because she comes to her conscience and realize that Dr. Maru is not evil. She just does evil things, and the evil is actually Ares.
It's a very Return of the Jedi moment. Kill her and join the dark side.
And she uses the gauntlets to deflect the energy back and kills Ares. And she realizes, of course, also that Steve now basically, you know, confetti everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so you see this.
That's dark. Oh, look, Trevor confetti. Ah, that's terrible.
Well, I'm just saying, what do you want? And you see that. So the end, the tour almost end. We're almost at the end. Thank God. We see the whole swath of destruction, right? We see the gaping pit and the destroyed warehouse and the vehicles and the yada yada, right? Which, okay.
And you see all of the participants in the battle on both sides just deciding that no one wants to fight anymore.
Because that's believable.
Yeah.
And then we fast forward to the beginning of the movie, which we flashed back from, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Diana opening the case from Wayne Industries, from Batman, from Bruce Wayne,
mm-hmm.
with some kind of glass lithograph, which was a photo, maybe?
Yeah, it's like the original photo that they took after the No Man's Land battle. I think the only positive contribution that the bookends actually provide is you have an understanding of just how godlike Diana is. She doesn't age. I mean, it's been 100 years since the photo was taken, and from this story, it's now in present day. And she looks the same. She has, you know, has no difference. She gives this ham-handed speech that does not land about how love is really what's going to win the war. Didn't make sense. That felt like a really bad, like fifth grade essay thesis statement.
Also, I didn't buy it.
Yeah, it was not earned.
Yeah, I mean, so they were a little close, but I never bought that. There never seemed to be any romantic story in the movie. They never sold me enough on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they had crazy physical chemistry, you know, because they're both charming and they're both really good looking.
Yeah,
especially together,
they're both pretty people.
Yeah, but they didn't. Yeah, they were on such different playing fields. I mean, she was very naive about the ways of the modern world, and he had no understanding of actually where she came from or what she could do. There didn't even seem to be an opportunity to make a connection like that.
Well, and also the fact that he realizes very much that he's mortal and he's fighting a war against mortality, and she's immortal. And so it's her duty to want to protect, but she's not on the same track because she can't be killed, or she thinks she can, but she's pretty sure she can't. because everything that's led her up to this point, she's been pretty invincible, and her training leads her to believe she's invincible. She acts like she's invincible. So even if she didn't know up to that point that she was a god and invincible, she sure acted like it. So,
yeah.
So,
yeah. So the ending of this movie bums me out. I really like this movie. If I was not watching it for the podcast tonight, I would actually stop watching after she kills Ludendorff. That's my ending.
Ah, I see. Well, okay. But Steve hasn't died yet at that point, has he?
No.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I can see your point to that. I understand. I don't disagree with you. So let's see. I think that's, so those are all my notes through the movie, including the plot. So I don't have anything else for the notes. Do you have anything else you want to add?
I don't want my feelings about the ending to take away from the fact that I think this is a great movie. I would really recommend it to anybody. I'm very much looking forward to being able to watch the sequel in a couple weeks.
I will say that this was certainly better than Captain America, which again, I don't know that that's a high bar to cross, but I would rate this, I'd say this is probably a B+, maybe an A-. It's right in that range. You know, it's definitely worth watching, I think. And I think you're right. The last couple bits is pointless and really drags the movie down. Also added about 20 minutes that wasn't necessary.
It really did.
So I don't know if they were like trying to burn up some CGI budget or what. But I definitely think, you know, I think that it's definitely something that, I'm, like I said earlier, I'm really interested to go back and rewatch it just to see what I missed and what I wasn't able to pay attention to. And now knowing the progression, I'll be able to look for things. So for throw it to you, you would say, is it worth it?
Definitely worth it. If you're going to watch any of the DC movies, I think this is the one.
Fair. Although I've seen other ones, I guess we've discussed. So.
Yeah. I mean, Aquaman was fine. Wasn't as good as this.
It was okay. I don't know that it was fine. Fine's a stretch for me. It was okay.
I wasn't mad at it, but I don't remember any of it. Like, I couldn't tell you what it was really about.
I remember Nicole Kidman in very awkward-looking CGI Youngville. That's what I remember.
Yep.
Like, crazy electronic Botox face is what she looked like. Mm-hmm. Which makes me uncomfortable because I know it doesn't exist. So, I don't know. It's just... I don't have anything else in the movie. Housekeeping. Do you have any housekeeping for this week?
No, it's Thanksgiving week. I had the week off, so that was nice. I'm sure you heard, we got another emergency order for Anchorage. This is a more definitive hunker down. So we're back to that. So I anticipate we'll be out in Willow for quite a while, probably through Christmas.
I see the hunker down order is for all of December, pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm in no way surprised. I had suspected this was going to happen. So, Oregon is locked down for at least another 2 weeks, I think. So, I guess my travel plans were going to have gotten canceled no matter what happened at this point.
Absolutely.
So as it turns out, I pulled the ripcord. The nieces and nephew present are already at the folks' house, so mom will have to wrap them. So sorry for that. Dad's already got his Christmas present for me. So
nice.
And so we're all set there. Thank you for the birthday present, by the way.
Oh yeah, hope you do something fun with it.
I suspect it will either be. It'll be cleaning supplies probably, and whatever else little stuff we need for the house. There's going to be little stuff we need.
Yes. Congratulations on your money pit.
Yeah. Well, there's only, I mean, there's a couple things we need to do. And that's going to, moving is going to be the, that's going to be, that's, but the good news is I've sold Derek's steam washer, pressure washer thing. So it's gone.
Oh, wow.
So thank God.
Congratulations.
That's a huge, just the trailer of it out of my garage is huge. Plus it was, it's a decent amount of money. So that will give us a cushion. Cause there's already, I already know a couple of things we need. Don't need to. A couple things I want to do to be comfortable. So, so there'll be that, packing, going through things, garbage, packing, going through, it's just going to be this cycle of stuff. Mm-hmm. I did change my vacation. I'm still going to take most of the time off. I was already going to take off cause it's use it or lose it for me pretty much at this point. So I'm not going to work for free. So I'm going to take the time off and, Jesse's going to take some of the same time off. So we'll be moving and it'll be kind of low key. We're hoping to be completely in the house by Christmas, which is the hope. So
nice. Very nice.
First Christmas in the new house would be nice. I'm still waiting for the closing, which will be Monday, but I went to all the title company crap and signed a billion million times. And
did you have to do that in person?
I did. Yeah, I couldn't. That was one of the few things that I couldn't do electronically. They told me like, no, you actually have to come down.
They talked you through every page, right?
Every signature, every page, and I found an error halfway through.
Oh God!
At which point she said, "Oh, crap," because. I guess when they print the packet, each little, and I don't know, each title company may be different, but for this title company, each packet has a unique kind of check digit system on the documents. And so at the point you have to go back and reprint it, you have to regenerate the entire thing new, which means then I had to go back and start re-signing everything I had already signed.
Oh man, it wasn't something you could just line out and
nope.
Initial?
No.
Oh, that sucks.
No, it was significant enough that I saw it and I'm like, this isn't right. And she's arguing with me that it is right. And I'm like, I'm telling you, this is not correct. It was in my favor. It was money in my favor. I'm like, this is going to come back. Like, this isn't right.
Yeah.
Like, I'm arguing to give you back money, against my true desires to steal money from you. Cause you're already robbing me blind. But, I did the honest thing and said, no, this is not right. Even though they were arguing, several people arguing with me that it was right. Turns out I was right. They were wrong. But that meant by necessity, they had to reprint the entire document, which I had to wait for. And then I had to start signing all over again. So what should have taken me like a half an hour ended up taking like an hour and a half. And it was pretty cranky by the time I was done with it, but I got a new pen out of it. So, hey, you know,
you've already used up half the ink though.
I was
going
to say probably, you know, it's my, you know,
it's amazing. They can take such a momentous life event, and make it so mind numbingly awful to experience.
Yeah. It was just like a constant punch to the balls. I was just glad it was over when it was over.
Yeah. Yeah,
I didn't have a sense of accomplishment. I didn't have like a woohoo moment where I was like, woohoo, I'm done. I was just like, I just want to get out of here.
Yeah, the whole process of buying a house, looking for and buying a house is so miserable.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for my realtor. I've told her many times, thank you for putting up with me, because I'm sure I was psychotic and crazy, because I'm psychotic and crazy on my best days. So I can only imagine the craziness when I was looking. And she said, no, you're fine. I mean, she goes, I've had much more needy and awful clients. So it is what, it's fine. So hopefully we close on Monday. I have Monday off work, so ostensibly we'll have keys and be going over Monday.
Very exciting.
I've already
got that'll be great.
All the utilities switched. Mostly. I'm having some difficulty with the internet because they tell me that the router modem is owned by the city because it's municipal internet. So they can't actually do anything until I'm physically in possession of and inside the house. So I don't know. And we're not, I mean, the first couple of days we're not going to be, well, probably the first couple of weeks we're not even going to be staying in the house. It's just going to be a bunch of taking stuff over, unpacking stuff, going back, taking stuff over, unpacking. So a lot of that in the beginning until we get to the big stuff. So
it's great that you have that luxury to be able to unpack as you go.
I think, and that's years ago, 20 years ago, when Derek and I moved into this house, it was the same, where we had about a month to move, which was good because when we moved before, it was not like that. We had like 3 days to get everything and move it. And I don't think I've ever wanted to not be alive any as much ever in my life. I'm looking forward to this being, Jesse will be off work some, I'll be off work entirely. And I'm not even going to take on call stuff during that time. I'm just going to be completely disconnected. So I have, I think from the 14th until I don't go back until the 3rd or 4th, whatever that Monday is.
Oh, nice.
January 4th or 3rd, whatever that. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to that. So
take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe rambling. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother J. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother J. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey, Joe.